the Fan.
Hey, what's happening? Brother, what's up? This is a big party, man.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying.
I think anyone who puckers up their lips and presses it against their boss's buttocks and then smooches is an ass kisser.
I seem to be inept at everything except my work. I'm good at my work. So I confine myself to that. All I want out of life is a 30 share and a 20 rating.
The man's enlarged my mind. He's a poet, warrior in the classic sense. I'm a little man. I'm a little man. He's a great man.
Think of it as colors. There's black and there's white. And in between is mostly gray. That's us. Now, gray is a tough color because it's not as simple as black and white. And for the media, certainly not as interesting. But it's who we are.
On a Monday, Leader, Fan, Fan Radio Network, and KFAN.com. 2 minutes, 35 seconds past the hour, 3 o'clock. Central Daylight Saving Time, Bumper to Bumper is the name of the program. It's live, it's local, and it is a 3.5 hour tour that starts right now. My name is Dan Barrero. I host the program. Garzy is the producer of the show, and we appreciate your interest in today's broadcast. We'll give you the Borton Volvo guest lineup in just a couple of minutes because I think it's timely, unfortunately so in this case, but nevertheless timely. And we'll give you more details on really what I think is going to be a bit of a combo platter show, but largely talking about that breaking news that I mentioned yesterday. The original news broke, I mentioned at the top of the show. The original breaking news was from something that took place yesterday in Brooklyn Center, but we've added another layer, obviously, upon learning via Brooklyn Center Police Chief Tim Gannon that he suspects the officer who fatally shot Dante Wright during that traffic stop yesterday did so by accident. He had released very quickly, part of the reason he wanted the body cam video released from an officer's body camera almost immediately, as in Monday afternoon. I think about a 1 minute stretch of footage from that body cam was indeed released. And it did indeed seem to indicate that a third officer who was ultimately involved in the case approached the car right after the attempt had been made to handcuff him outside the vehicle. He seems to attempt to get back into the vehicle and does, at which point officers start moving towards the car door, As Wright moves into the driver's seat, the female officer shouts, "Taser, taser." Car drives forward. Officer says, "Holy bleep, I just shot him." So the police chief is saying he believes that that officer intended to use the taser and instead, tragically, horrifically, inexcusably, ends up using a gun and kills Dante Wright. Already, there are endless ramifications to this, as one might expect. We're going to try to cover several parts of the story, as we at least try to do, and we'll have some help with some guests in that regard as well. The other breaking news is related to a number of public officials stating that in an effort to, I think, here's what's doubly tragic, Garzy. The law enforcement, or I even should say the political approach from the leaders, from the governor, from the mayors of Minneapolis and St. Paul, and maybe even Brooklyn Center as well, has been formed because of the tragic experience we have being here before, right? It is an attempt this time to, if nothing else, discourage and hopefully prevent the level of violence and destruction that took place in many of these same cities, many of these same areas last year. And for that reason, no one is waiting this time around because we have that firsthand experience. We're as experienced in this as any town in America. That's not anything to be proud of, but it's true because we've been here before. As recently as a case that's, by the way, continuing to play out downtown Minneapolis. As we get closer to what appears to be the end of the prosecution case and the start of the defense offering up its own case in the Derek Chauvin trial. So we have a curfew that has been issued for three counties, including Hennepin, starting at 7 p.m. tonight. I think it's 7 p.m. to 6 a.m. You can double check the times on the other end.
That's right.
And so there's not any waiting for, well, let's see how the demonstrations go, and if they're peaceful, maybe we just kind of get through this. There's an attempt here to be proactive and to say, we don't want to go through what we went through the last time. We heard that, not in those words, but that's to me what these actions indicate. As a result of those curfew actions, in part, a number of sports franchises, professional franchises here, already affected. The Minnesota Twins previously had announced that their day game with the Boston Red Sox was being postponed. And the Twins had issued a statement. We're hearing from state officials, including, I think, Commissioner Harrington, that the state did not advise the Twins to postpone today's game. The Twins may have felt, once again, it was proactive, even though ultimately at the time they didn't know a curfew was in place. They may have known one was coming, 7 p.m., game's supposed to start a little after 1. They may say, let's just be doubly cautious here, because we don't know. Might there be some unrest downtown later the afternoon? Might spectators get involved in that? We're just going to call the game. Since then, and since the curfew news was revealed, we got word from both the Minnesota Timberwolves that their game tonight against the Brooklyn Nets has been postponed. A game, by the way, in which A-Rod was slated to appear, right? He was supposed to be at the game tonight.
Yes, the new owners are in town.
The prospective new owners of the Minnesota Timberwolves. So that game postponed, and the Minnesota Wild also confirming, correct, that their game has been postponed as well, correct?
Yes. The Wild has been rescheduled for May 12th. Not sure on the Wolves. Not sure exactly on the Twins. But it made sense once the cities went to the curfews, because that was the sequence. It was Minneapolis and St. Paul both putting in the curfews. It made sense that no games at 7 o'clock were going to be played. And
correct.
Then Governor Walz put the curfew in at the end of that press conference for the three counties you mentioned, Hennepin, Ramsey, and Anoka, 7 p.m. to 6 a.m.
There's a lot of ground to cover, and we'll try to, as I said, cover as much of it as we can regarding the press conferences that we heard, in which we heard from the governor, among others, speaking once again of the experience of what we endured, what the state endured, perhaps politically speaking, what the governor and the mayors endured, the tone from the governor also, really not just the governor, this is from Commissioner Harrington as well, very different this time around. And the governor's tone was, don't try to co-opt this tragedy, because that's what it is, it's horrific. Don't try to co-opt this and think that we are going to allow you to burn things down. Once again, we're hearing that message far more often, far more quickly than we did last time around. Again, in part, probably because we have been here before. And maybe there is some regret that enough of that message was not sent out on the front end. I don't know. But you also heard the same thing. You know, Commissioner Harrington, I think, was trying to make a point. We've heard in the past that when things are burned down or are damaged, those are just things. Those aren't people. And Harrington's point was, well, but people work in those places. They own those businesses. There are human faces, and we are not interested in not protecting their rights and their interests in that regard. And he made that point several times as well. So we have, in terms of guests, 3:30, we're going to be joined by St. Cloud Police Chief Blair Anderson. And anyone who's listened to this show for a while knows that we've had the chief on many times over the years on a number of different subjects. Now, obviously, what took place did not take place in St. Cloud, Minnesota. We get that. We understand that part. But we have found our conversations with the chief enlightening at a time like this previously, insightful, interesting, maybe even important. Now, you're not obligated to necessarily agree with everything the chief says, but we like talking to the chief at a time like this. He is a guy who I think speaks well on the issues of the challenges and the issues of law enforcement, but he's also a man who is candid about speaking on the issue of race and social justice as well. I think he offers that balancing act, and we will chat with him, as I said, about 3:30 this afternoon. Originally, I'd sent out a note that John Krasinski, Monday regular, would join us at 3:55 to give us a little bit more balance to the show. In terms of guests, we're going to go to him about 4:15. We'll move him back to 4:15 today as well to talk a little bit about this breaking story and how it's affecting the Timberwolves, and even get into some other aspects of it as well. I wanted to get to a couple of other things that we heard early here from several of the press conferences. Minnesota National Guard, apparently more than 1,000 Minnesota National Guard soldiers will be in the streets in the Twin Cities by tonight. That, again, a dramatic shift. I don't know how many days we waited until that heavy presence started being felt in the Twin Cities last summer, but
I don't think it was until Saturday.
Till Saturday. Mm-hmm. It might have even been longer than that. It was quite a while. And even then, when there was first discussion about it, it seemed a little bit delayed. This time, apparently more than 1,000 Minnesota National Guard soldiers will be on the streets in the Twin Cities by tonight as well. Comments from the Minneapolis Police Chief. They are in what they call phase 3 of their so-called Operation Safety Net during the Chauvin trial. And that means apparently more uniformed police and National Guard visible on the street as well. He also confirmed that there were between 25 and 30 arrests last night in Minneapolis in the aftermath of the Dante Wright death. Now, to a certain extent, I think the chief was saying, as the Chauvin case moves closer to being sent to the jury. And I think the new hints we're getting is that closing arguments might begin as early as next Monday, that they already were going to go in a different phase as we got closer to the possibility of a verdict being rendered. I mentioned that Harrington, the Minnesota Public Safety Commissioner John Harrington, says he did not recommend to the Twins that they postpone the game today, basically left it up to all local organizations. One of the things he talked about, and I want to get into this with Chief Anderson, is that their hope was to get, they want law enforcement to connect as much as possible within their community, communicate with them, and even give them lawful places where they could go about their grieving, about being in contact with other people, et cetera, et cetera. And I know, talking to the chief over the years, I'm sure that's what he was doing all day today. That means often dealing with faith organizations as well, churches, synagogues, et cetera, et cetera. Mayor Carter, St. Paul, says that, quote, traumatizing the same neighborhoods destroyed after George Floyd death will not accomplish anything. Same very strong, more declarative message on that. No one is saying that there's any reasonable explanation for what the tragedy that took place here, or that it should be minimized. It's more what the communities are going to attempt to do to say further damage, protests that go into wanton looting, destruction, whatever the case may be, in no way, shape, or form strengthens that particular cause. So we got the curfew information out. Let's get our first break in, and I'll get to a couple of other nuggets that that we seem to know about this case. There's much more, obviously, that we do not know as well. Bradshaw and Brian Inbox is in, Booth at KFAN.com, and I do want to respond to a couple of interesting early emails regarding this breaking news story and how it might even affect the deliberations, the proceedings in the deliberations in the Chauvin trial as well. So we'll be here until 6:30 tonight. As I mentioned, Johnny Athletic 4:15 and St. Cloud Police Chief Blair Anderson in about 15 minutes or so.
KFAN.
Tri-County area, including Hennepin County and Ramsey, a 7 p.m. curfew tonight. That was announced by, well, we had the mayors and we had the governor actually make it beyond, go beyond the cities into counties as well. As a result, Wild had a game tonight. That's postponed. And the Timberwolves had a home game tonight. That also postponed. Twins previously postponed a 1 o'clock start with the Boston Red Sox today as well. So all three teams will not be playing today and or tonight. St. Cloud Police Chief Blair Anderson, as I mentioned, is with us on the Connecticut Water Systems Hotline. They've been with us many, many times over the years, sometimes in not such a with not such a tragic backdrop. But nevertheless, he's been a welcome addition to this program over the years, and we appreciate his time again today. Chief, thanks for checking in. I appreciate it.
Excellent, Dan. Can you hear me okay?
Hear you loud and clear. Hope you can hear us as well.
I can. Thank you for having me on, sir. I appreciate it.
I know you're in some ways, perhaps a difficult position in terms of how far you can go on a specific case like this. So I'll leave that to you. You're a pro. You know what you can say, what you're comfortable saying, and what you're not. But I'll throw the toss-up question. To the average Rube out there, the average listener, the average person, based on what we seem to already know in this case, as revealed by the police chief in that jurisdiction, I think the human reaction is, how can this possibly happen? To which you say what?
Well, Dan, I believe it or not, I still haven't seen what everyone else has seen because I've been fielding calls all day from respective members of our own community, be they faith-based or government partners or business partners. And so I haven't seen it, so I don't think it's appropriate for me to comment on it. But from what I have heard, yeah, Dan, it's awful. You know, my feelings are the same as everyone else's, but I honestly, I don't have any more to say about that because I have not yet seen it. And as you know, I'm a huge proponent of getting all the facts. Yep. You and I have talked about this a lot, getting all the facts before I make any comments.
Well, let me try. I'll try it this way, even without the video. The Brooklyn Center Police Chief, Tim Gannon, a man you may know. I don't know because you've been in your job for a while. In any case, he is saying that he suspects that the officer, the female officer who apparently did the shooting, shouts "taser, taser," and then ends up using a gun instead. So his conclusion, and again, this doesn't have to be the last word. He admits that. Is that she thought she had a taser in her hand and was ready to use that and thought she was using that and instead used a gun. Now, you can speak more generally to the issue of how that confusion might possibly take place. I've read, believe it or not, that there have been tragic cases like this before, going back over the years. You'd like to think there'd be safeguards in place that would make that almost impossible, but what is your own experience in that regard in terms of setting up for your officers the use of a taser versus the use of a gun?
Sure, and Dan, I was going to say the same thing that you've said, that this has happened before. That is, in fact, what happened. This has happened before, and that's a little consolation to anybody who has lost a loved one, and so I get that. So I'm prefacing my comments by saying that so that it doesn't appear I'm making excuses. Dan, the way we train, it's all about muscle memory, but when you are confronted and when you are in a critical incident, you lose a lot of the senses that we rely upon, right, as human beings, which is why we train via repetition and muscle memory, because you lose your finite motor skills, your auditory senses slow down, physiologically things happen to you. And I might get into trouble. I'm not trying to, but things happen to you when you are in a critical incident. And again, that's no consolation to somebody who's lost a loved one, but it has happened before.
During one of the press conferences that involved the governor and the mayors of both Minneapolis and St. Paul, Mayor Carter, I believe it was Mayor Carter, who said something to the effect of one of his goals here is to get to a place where the differences between the way those two weapons operate, the way they are shaped, etc., that there should be a better way to make it almost impossible for someone to mistake one for the other. Can you tell us at all about the history of, in terms of, because I assume that concern, if it's happened before, has come up about finding better ways to change the way they feel, the way they operate, even the shapes of those things, or is that unrealistic?
You know what, Dan? Yes and no. The honest answer is it's all about the placement of that particular tool, which is one of many that we have on our tool belt. But I will give you some meat on this one. What I wish would happen, and you didn't ask me this, but I'm going to say it anyway. What I wish would happen is that folks who don't know what they're talking about would stop talking about stuff. And because it's not helpful. It is not. There have been far too many elected officials who have rendered opinions about things without knowing all of the facts yet. And at the risk of being redundant, you and I talk about this a lot, right, off air. Mm-hmm. Wait until all the facts have rolled in. And so, boy, if there's a way, we work with our vendors all the time on things like this, but if there's a way for those two things to be a little bit more distinguishable, trust me, they have been explored, and there have been advances since the inception you know, of the taser, which goes back probably 20 plus years now. And so we're evolving and we're trying to get better. And again, if I get into trouble for saying that, okay, because I know it's little consolation to somebody who's lost a loved one, but we're trying, man. We're trying really hard, and it's not helpful when folks who don't know anything about what they're talking about continue to make public comments about what we should do or what we could do better, because the implication is that we're not exploring those ideas that you suggested, and that's just not true.
You are a very savvy, accomplished police officer. I say police chief at this point. You know, that's all I call you is chief, out of respect for the work you've done and the help you've given us over the years. You are also a black man. Can you speak and understand the anger that exists once again from many people, including people of color, saying, okay, call it an accident. Maybe it was an accident, but here we are again. There is a lot of emotion that we're already hearing, that I'm already getting via email, that I'm sure you're already receiving. I want to talk to you about how you handle things within the St. Cloud area in your own community at a time like this, but can you speak to that anger?
I can, Dan, because, you know, in addition to being a law enforcement professional for 25 plus years, I'm also a human being. I'm also somebody, as you pointed out, I'm over 50 years old and I grew up black in this community. So to suggest, and I'm not saying you are, but for anybody to suggest that I don't understand the anger, the angst, the frustration is absurd. I get it. I understand. But my comment to that, Dan, is that find me another profession where, and I believe this in my heart because I've seen it, where 9 out of 10 people in the profession are doing the job the right way for the right reason. But the hue and cry is we need total reform. I don't know where else that is happening or where else that exists in our society today. And so while I ask no quarter from the public for things that go wrong when it's our fault, and there are plenty of instances throughout history where, whatever has happened has been our fault for a variety of reasons, but we can unpack all of that. That's a whole nother show. As a person of color, as a black man, as a black man in law enforcement, I guess I'm urging people to just be proponents of getting all the facts before you make a judgment and then act on that. Because what I don't understand, and again, I grew up in Detroit, Michigan, the scene of one of the most horrific riots in this country in the 60s. I don't get the correlation, and you can't make a nexus with me with, you know, wholesale destruction because you're angry, because you're upset, because you're frustrated. And I never will. People have tried to explain it to me, Dan. I don't get it, right? There are plenty of people, the businesses that were destroyed, forget Minneapolis, but all over the country are businesses that have been built by people lots of times, people of color, who have put their entire lives into trying to make a better life for themselves and their family. And because you're upset, how do you get the right to go in there and destroy that? So I don't get it.
I mentioned at the first segment of the show, to that end, potential reaction that goes beyond words and anger, which is part of what a free country is all about. You and I think we'll agree on that, is that the message that was conveyed by the politicians, starting with the governor, was a lot more forceful this time on the front end as it pertains to that particular issue, from him, from Mayor Carter, from Fry, from Harrington, Commissioner Harrington as well. It appears to me that the mechanics are in place here this time, that there's going to be on the front end less tolerance to like wait a couple of days to see how it goes, as opposed to no, we're going to be very tough on that particular issue from the very beginning. Do you get that same feeling in your own communication, because you are a police chief within the state of Minnesota, when in the stuff that you're getting from the state as well?
Yes, I do. And Dan, I do think that that is appropriate, because here's the news. We take an oath, corny as it sounds, to protect and serve. I flip the script and serve and protect for anybody in my community, in my agency, all people, everybody, all of their rights. And so I do like the fact that, we're being a little bit more proactive as a discipline to make sure that things do not get out of hand like they did last summer. So to that, hats off to them and whatever I can do to provide support for that. And at a time like this, this is kind of an all hands on deck kind of a thing, because there are not enough police officers in the metro area to do this without help from assisting agencies. And so we're going to do our part like everybody else. So in that regard, absolutely, if that answers your question, Dan, we do need to take a more proactive stance to make sure that things don't get out of hand.
Why, philosophically for you, is serve and protect so much more meaningful than protect and serve?
Because the protection aspect, Dan, is a given. What has been missing, and what I think has been part of the problem for law enforcement throughout history, is that the service aspect hasn't been emphasized enough. And so that's why I flipped that mantra when I took over as chief in St. Cloud, because not only do I want my folks to go out on the street every day with that mindset, I only want to hire people who have that mindset inherently. Right. We are public servants. And what has gotten lost in all this madness is the service aspect, because so many people see us as oppressors. So many people, you know, I say all the time to my officers, this uniform is a symbol of a lot of things. It's a symbol of service and sacrifice. But to some people, mostly people who look like me, it's a symbol of oppression and of violence and of terrorism. And however we can flip that script and help people understand that we are here for you, because here's the news, Dan, you call, we come. Our society has been conditioned when things are going wrong, you pick up the phone and call 911. We're coming. And when we leave said situation, I want things to be better than it was when we got there.
May I hold you over for a second segment?
Sure, absolutely.
All right, we're going to do that because there's a lot more I want to get to with St. Cloud Police Chief Blair Anderson. And really, part of what I want to cover the next segment is the original reason I'd wanted him on the show early in the week. And that brainstorm had nothing to do with anticipating the tragedy that we are talking about with him that took place yesterday, and we're getting more information on today as well. Johnny Athletic will join later in the fourth. St. Cloud Police Chief Blair Anderson, kind enough to give us some extra time, a second segment. He is on the Connecticut Water Systems hotline as we continue. And Chief, you mentioned that it's been a busy day for you today. So what is on your list? Because I know this is what you like to prepare for. You'd rather not have to prepare for, but this is a time where you have very distinct ideas about the best approach to take to try to maintain as much order and sanity. And as I mentioned, just sort of sense to try to lower the temperature. Who have you talked to today? What is your approach on a day like this?
Well, first of all, my compliments for the bumper music, not to make light of the
yes.
gravity of the situation, but the Manhattans, it takes me back.
There you go.
Okay. So I've been on the phone today with leaders from our faith-based community, with leaders from our business community, with leaders from, as you well know, we have probably the third or fourth largest university in the state in our backyard, that being St. Cloud State. And so leaders from all of those different facets of our community, and they've all asked the same question. what can we do? What should we be doing? What are we not doing? And, you know, my answer to them, Dan, because, again, this is where we are truly blessed, my answer was simple. Let's keep doing what we have been doing. And what I mean by that is we have tried to be reactive and stay ahead of the curve and not have to do something because something happened, if you will. Whether that be our youth engagement or whether that be other facets of our community engagement division where we are reaching out to families, where we are partnering with public health to do, you know, dental clinics, to do, you know, financial literacy clinics with the banking industry. So we, Dan, I'm telling you, I can't say enough about the St. Cloud community and the way they come together. And that meeting was contentious. There were some people who weren't happy with what is going on and in their mind, what they think we are doing versus what we should be doing. But that's the point.
Mm-hmm.
There's a space for that. There's a forum for that for people to air their grievances and their opinions. And then we go from there.
How do you, you're in the middle of that and you've been through these things before, in terms of letting people vent and still sort of laying out, okay, here's why we're doing what we're doing here. Here's why I think this is the important, the best approach for us to take. What is that process like for you? I assume the key to it must be keeping your composure and keeping your cool because nothing, no one's going to win if it ends up becoming people yelling at each other.
100%, Dan. It's not always easy, and I do understand that sometimes people just need somebody to yell at,
yep.
And I'm okay. You know, we've got big, broad shoulders, and if you just need somebody to yell at, get that out, and then let's get to the substantive issues that we need to address regarding our respective communities or the state or the country at large. So, yeah, some of that is just taking it, Dan. Some of that is just letting people yell at you and letting people cry and letting people, you know, expel all of that, what the angst that they have. And then once that's done, now let's get to something that is substantive, Dan. What I think is, and you didn't ask me this, but I'm going to put it in here, is what we are seeing right now is a microcosm of our national leadership. And I'm just going to be honest with you. There used to be a time, you and I are both old enough to remember when you could respectfully agree to disagree with somebody and it didn't lead to wholesale destruction. Well, now we're at a place, at least in my opinion, where if someone doesn't agree with you, whether it's an individual or a group, they want everything the way they want it right now. There's no compromise. And if they don't get that, they bully us, and the stick that they carry is, well, there'll be wholesale destruction. And I just don't know how we are ever going to get anything resolved with that attitude. So we need to change that.
The original reason that I wanted to have you on, and have been really thinking about this since late last week, even though I had not reached out to you, was a story that had been brought to my attention out of the USA Today. And the more originally I said, you know, is today the day to bring it up, given this is the breaking news? I said, no, you know what? I think it is, because my concern is that these stories end up being connected, and that actually that my fear is that a tragedy such as this one, based on at least what we know to this point, that it can sometimes contribute, despite good intentions, which is to demand more from law enforcement, to challenge law enforcement, which I don't think you necessarily disagree with, for making sure that we hold officers who don't do their job right accountable, that it creates an atmosphere in which the other problem that I'm about to talk about ends up worsening. And I say that because we've had a great movement over the course of the last year having to do in many cases with, let's defund the police. We want fewer police officers. Let's find other ways to interrupt the violence, et cetera, et cetera. And again, I think the intention there is often good because there's frustration about stories such as the George Floyd case, et cetera. But as is pointed out in this piece by Jason Johnson, we've got, in effect, what I call, the term I use for it is a slow-motion riot that's taking place in many of the major cities in America. And the term I learned from a fiction writer who was referring to the fact that if day-to-day you have a shooting here, a killing there, in many communities, often communities of color, that is a form of riot, or that is a form of destruction that affects everybody in the community. And Jason Johnson lays out the numbers. You know them. New York City, Chicago, Minneapolis, St. Paul, quite frankly, New Orleans, Los Angeles. St. Louis has hit a 50-year homicide high just in the course of the last, really, 10 to 12 months. And part of what Jason Johnson is talking about is we can do both. We can continue, I think, to try to get the answers that anybody deserves after a tragedy again like this that took place yesterday. And even going back to the Floyd case, which now Chauvin is in court as we speak, we can do that. But be careful if the message becomes fewer cops, we don't need the cops, we're looking for a community in which we don't even have to have police, when we see the slow motion rioting that's taking place in many American cities that is killing who mainly? People of color. What are your thoughts on that?
And isn't that ironic, Dan, that there's a correlation with the hue and cry for defunding police, particularly in some of our larger American urban cities, and the spike in crime? No, it's not ironic. There's a direct correlation because the bad folks are listening and watching too. And guess who is on the front line rooting and rah-rahing for defunding police and getting rid of more police? And I saw that article. You sent it to me today, but you and I have been talking about this for the better part of a year, and we've watched this happen. Dan, it is not a coincidence that we are seeing a mass exodus from law enforcement, unlike what we have seen in the last 20 or 25 years. Why? I'll start with our own state house, and I've testified three times in the last couple of months with the ridiculous and absurd notions and legislation that they are proposing, up to and including, well, we need to get rid of no-knock warrants. Well, that's ridiculous, and here's the reason why. Any search warrant that is obtained by a police agency has to be signed by a judge, and specificity is the word of the day. You have to be specific about where you're going, what you're looking for, and where you hope to find it. I can go on and on. You know, there was legislation proposed in our state house that every police officer should have a personal liability insurance policy. Well, okay, that's great, but it's not. It sounds good to people who want police reform, but let's think about this from a business standpoint, Dan. Who's going to underwrite that? There's no insurance company in the world that's going to underwrite something like that. Why? Because we're already indemnified by our respective municipalities, and so we don't need that. But these are the things that the quote-unquote so-called activists and advocates are asking for, and in my opinion, some of our elected officials, not just here in Minnesota but across the nation, are being bullied into putting some of these things into play, and those are not sustainable. Those are not effective, and they're not going to work. And I'll finish with this, Dan. Thank you for indulging me. I hosted at least 15 state legislators from the state of Minnesota last year from both sides of the aisle. And one of the things that I asked them to do was find the 10 best police departments in this state based on what we are hearing from the community, which is police community relations are terrible. And find out what they're doing that works before you start proposing legislation. If you talk to those 10 agencies and find out what they're doing that is working, do that before you start drafting legislation or reform bills, or before you become impetuous about what you want to do. And Dan, it was like talking to a brick wall. Hence the reason I have testified at least two or three times in the last month in front of our state legislature and some of the subcommittees, because the stuff they are proposing, I'm going to be honest, and I've said it before, is trash, and it is dangerous, and it is going to get people killed. And that's not hyperbole. That's just how I see it as a professional.
One of the most important aspects of this, I think, as we wrap up, is if most of the polls I continue to see indicate that the vast majority of individuals, white and of color, are not interested in less police. They are interested, and I think rightly in many cases, of police being held to a better standard, higher standard, the bad ones, get rid of them, etc., etc. But that is, again, I think one of the great ironies here is that, and maybe one of the reasons those polls are strengthened are the stats I've laid out. More than 20,000 murders in the United States this last year, the highest total since 1995, 4,000 more than in 2019. And as I mentioned, a number of the cities, these numbers are through the roof. And I think what that is reminded people, well, Portland is another good example where there was a big effort to not only defund police by $12 million, but eliminate three police units. They've got all kinds of issues now, and even the mayor there is reversing field. So, again, I think you can absolutely believe in law enforcement reform and making smart changes that can be helpful and can hold bad officers more accountable. But you can believe that, but also believe that doesn't mean we need fewer officers, because we're seeing this thing play out. And in those communities, even if the daily coverage isn't the same, you can speak to this probably better than I, because you talk to people. That's what often also terrorizes people in many communities, including communities of color.
100%, Dan, and I didn't address that before, but I will now. You know, we had a meeting with Congressman Tom Emmer, who represents our district up there in central Minnesota, and whether you like him or don't like him, he is the epitome of what true representation is. And one of the things he said was similar to what you just said. You know, we can look at both issues separately and deal with them, and that there are more people who are in favor of the current structure, and certainly not in favor of just defunding and tearing down the whole structure and starting over. And so that gives me hope. While I'm concerned, I'm deeply concerned, those kinds of things give me hope. And his point was there's a silent majority and they just haven't spoken up yet, but there are more people out there than not who do not want to see the defunding efforts that we have seen. And unfortunately, though, for now, this platform that some of these folks have been given, this hollow platform, if you will, is kind of what rules the day. And that's what gives me concern. What gives me hope is that there are plenty of people out there who understand and know that the vast majority of police officers out there are doing the job the right way for the right reason, and that if we push them away, we're in big trouble. And you already know that's how I feel about this issue. And so I don't know what else to say, Dan, that hasn't been said already, except that please give us, you know, after 9/11, we could do no wrong. Now, if there are things that we have done wrong in the past, which there are, let us address them. But wholesale destruction and tearing down the whole structure, because we're just one part of it. You know, we're at the end of the catch basin, Dan. When all the other systems fail people and all the other social pathologies that ail us as a society, as humans, fail, people call us. And the sad part is they get mad when we don't do it the way they want us to do it. But sometimes, quite frankly, it's not in our bailiwick. It's not in our wheelhouse. And so we need everybody's help. We can do nothing alone. We all need each other. And that sounds corny, but if I say nothing else, I want everybody to know that the vast majority of cops out there are doing the job the right way for the right reason.
Last item, I've gotten several emails on this from people saying, you know, Dan, you're avoiding the big question related to the case out of Brooklyn Center. If the victim had simply followed the officer's instructions and had allowed himself to be handcuffed, he would be alive. To which I say this, that might be true, but I still don't think that that excuses an officer using excessive force if indeed that resistance takes place. So if you can't speak to that in this specific case because of your concern about letting it play out, how about more generally?
What I can say generally, Dan, and I'm going to be honest with you, you know as well as I do, I can't say anything generally because people are going to take things how they take them. I didn't see it. I don't know yet. And so I can't say.
Okay.
Here's what I will say. Very simple. We're out there to serve and protect you. And so help us do that. However you see fit. And I know, Dan, I'm taking the easy way out on that question, but I don't want to make any comments specifically about that case or even generally for people to interpret that I'm saying that it was the victim's fault or whatever, because I haven't seen it. And so I'm just not going to do that. So respectfully, my friend, I'm just going to leave that alone right now. That's okay.
Thank you for the extra time today, Chief. We'll be in touch. Thanks as always.
All right. Thank you, my friend. Have a good day.
You as well. That is St. Cloud Police Chief Blair Anderson. Let's break. I'm going to let you send it to break because I know you got some work to get in. Don't forget Johnny Athletic coming up as well in just a few minutes.
Yeah, a couple of things to get to. First of all, Grand in Your Hand is back, so we'll give you the keyword for our national cash contest. And remind you, you're going to KFAN.com now. No text number. Go to KFAN.com. Enter the keyword spring. That's how you enter as we try to put a grand in your hand. KFAN.com. Keyword spring. And as we go to break, get ready for Johnny Athletic. We will throw it to Scott Peterson with Minnesota News Network for today's update from the Derek Chauvin trial.
So-called spark of life witness Philonis Floyd, brother of George Floyd, testified that he missed George and their mother.
I was married. In May 24th, I got married. And my brother was killed. May 25th.
Philonis and George's mother died in May 2018. In his testimony, Philonis affectionately called George a mama's boy. Also today, cardiologist Dr. Jonathan Rich from Chicago testified that in his opinion, George Floyd did not die from a primary cardiac event and...
I see no evidence at all to suggest that a fentanyl overdose caused Mr. Floyd's death.
Dr. Rich added that in his opinion, meth played no substantive role in Floyd's death, but defense attorney Eric Nelson asked,
what is a safe dose of methamphetamine?
Prescribed?
Illicit.
I would never consider any illicit drug to be off the street that's not prescribed by a physician.
For live trial coverage, stream CBSN Minnesota on WCCO.com. You're listening to
Fan the Fan.
Well, Gargia told me that Krasinski was going to have to go earlier than usual, about 3:55 today, and my assumption was he was going to be fairly busy at Target Center the rest of the night. Wolves had back-to-back, so they beat the Bulls last night in exciting fashion, and they were hosting the Brooklyn Nets tonight, and the added impetus for Johnny, one assumes, is that the new ownership group, the prospective new minority owners early, majority owners eventually, when Glenn Taylor really gets tired of owning the club, which might be another 8 years, we're going to be there, including A-Rod. Then word breaking that a curfew has been put in place for Minneapolis, Minnesota, in fact, for all of Hennepin County. And tonight's Wolves game, for that reason, postponed. And so that meant Johnny had probably a little bit more flexibility in his schedule. Is that pretty much how it went down?
That's exactly how it went down, Dan. Yep. I was trying to, get done early with you guys, get the quality segments in that I was doing every week, and then head over to the arena a little earlier than I thought, than I usually do, just because you never know what you're going to see over there now with some new owners kind of lurking about. And I just kind of wanted to soak it up a little bit. But unfortunately, for much, understandable reasons, we're moving it on. I don't know. There's a possibility that they might play tomorrow, depending on how things go.
Right.
But we'll have to see on that.
All right. So you and I talked in depth yesterday about the breaking news you guys broke at the Athletic Saturday regarding A-Rod, who is, as I said, going to be here. Have you had a chance, regardless of whether I'm sure you're going to try to talk to him tonight, have you been able to have any direct conversations with him? Is any new, intriguing, interesting information you've gleaned about this process since we spoke on Sermons?
Well, one thing I can say, kind of building off of a little bit of our conversation yesterday, Dan, is that, the one thing that I picked up, I guess, in the last 24 hours, I would say, about Alex Rodriguez, this is not a ceremonial position for him. This is not Peyton Manning buying into the Grizzlies or Jay-Z with like a quarter of a percent of the Nets, or even, this is why KG could not get in. Is that Alex Rodriguez is building an empire from a business standpoint. Now, Mark Lowry, I think, has a little bit more money right now, but we're talking about, talking to people who know Alex well, there, that he has a real estate empire that he started very early in his career. He's got thousands of apartments, literally. He's got these businesses that he's made a bunch of money off, and more that are being developed and co-founded. And so he is a heavyweight in the financial sector as much as he is a heavyweight in the athletic sector. So that, kind of just sort of contributes to the serious capital influx that this is going to be, because A-Rod's not just a face here. He's not just along for the ride. He's bringing a big checkbook with him.
Oh, interesting. So, again, I've got, even since you started, 5 new emails from people about the question of the team leaving. And you addressed that extensively on Sunday. And I don't blame people. I really don't. I think it's perfectly understandable, perfectly natural. We always feel that we're about to be abandoned, right? And sometimes we have been. And you go back far enough, the Wolves were the only reason the Minnesota Timberwolves did not go to New Orleans was David Stern didn't let them. I mean, it's as simple as that. Because I don't think, I think the deal was solid enough if the league wanted to believe in it. But I think Stern said, no, it's too big a market. Those guys didn't work hard enough. We're not giving up. We're just not giving up on the market. So I get it. And we've had, obviously the North Stars left, et cetera, et cetera. So why don't you give your comments, and maybe even they've evolved it all. Maybe there's some new information you can bring to the issue of why I think, if I can speak for you, that you believe it's still unlikely that this team is going to move, even if the new guys really deep down might want to move the team.
Right. I think that's what I would say. Like, everybody, as soon as I broke the news, it was fait accompli. Well, I got a million pictures of A-Rod in his Mariners uniform, right? And Seattle, Seattle, Seattle. And so here's what I've gleaned, and this is not just my opinion. This is from talking to people in the league, and not just the Timberwolves and the A-Rod Lowry camps. This is people in the NBA world that have a good idea for this. That basically, because the league has lost so much revenue from the pandemic, there is more of an appetite than ever to expand the league. And Adam Silver called it inevitable in December. And I think that what that would mean is that you would get per market that comes in, and it's for sure Seattle, it's presumably Las Vegas as well, you're looking at upwards of $2.5, maybe even $3 billion per market to bring in to the NBA's coffers. It's not imminent, but that's what the league is looking at down the road here. And so
That is obviously a lot larger check that would be written and would be distributed among the other owners than if you would charge the Timberwolves, let's say, $600, $700, $800 million to relocate to Seattle. And so that's where kind of the thought is that the league would rather expand to Seattle and to Vegas rather than have a team move to get that kind of money, to get a fresh start there and all of those things. And that's why it makes it unlikely. And building off of what you said there too, Dan, about David Stern believing in the NBA, in the market in the Twin Cities, the NBA, believe it or not, absolutely thinks that the Twin Cities is a valuable market for them to be in. It's what they view it as about the 13th best market in the league from a size-wise, from a potential-wise. What they want more than anything is not for a team to leave here. It's for a good team to be here. And that's why they hope that this new ownership structure, new blood, more money, all those things would contribute to what they know is a good basketball town. It's just that they've had no reason to be a good basketball town. Now, all over this, you can never say never on any of this. This isn't
sure.
a blanket statement that's saying they're definitely not moving. I'm just saying that there are a lot of factors involved in the economic landscape of the NBA that all point much more strongly to expansion to Seattle and Las Vegas rather than a team moving there.
Money talks, I think somebody once said many, many years ago, and it's hard to argue with those numbers that you lay out, even if the new guys in charge wouldn't mind moving him. Now, there's another part of that conspiracy theory that I think relates to A-Rod himself, and it's viewed as follows. A-Rod is a big-timer, man. He's used to the big city. He's used to New York. He's used to Miami. He doesn't want to spend any more time than he needs to in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. It's flyover country is what it is, that it's not glitzy enough for him. It's not glamorous enough to him, to which you would say what?
Well, I would say this. I agree. I agree with that in terms of what he is. He's a Miami guy. He's a New York guy.
Right.
Like, that's how he rolls. He both A-Rod and Mark Lori and Jennifer Lopez tried to buy the New York Mets last year, and they got outbid in that, and they lost it to Stephen Cohen is the guy's name, who was already a minority owner with the Mets, and so that they definitely wanted that, it didn't work out. But I will say this too, A-Rod absolutely is image, is flashy, is glitzy, and all of those things. He's big city guy, but what you kind of find out about him is he's also investor guy. And so what a lot, I think, of what Mark Lori and Alex Rodriguez are looking at here is you're buying a franchise, even though $1.5 billion is a lot of money, in the grand scheme of what franchises are going for, it's not. And they also, I think you can say confidently that this is an organization that has been poorly run for the better part of 15 years or more. And so there is a lot of upside to come in here. They are buying a distressed asset and believing that they can pump some money into it, make some changes to it, get it up and running. And if this becomes a playoff team, then you're looking at all of a sudden a revived market. Maybe you look at a building, a changes to Target Center or something else. Maybe, you're going to see TV ratings soar. You're going to see gate receipts soar and all those things. And if that happens, then you become the geniuses. And so I think they're looking at this as more, as a business investment in terms of where they're buying it rather than paying, $5 billion for the Knicks if they were ever to become available.
Do you have a second segment in you?
Of course I got a second segment for you, Dan.
I had a hunch you would. Johnny Athletic, always on the spot, gave us extra time yesterday on sermons, back again today. We got a lot more ground to cover, including what he's hearing about the possibility of Timberwolves players, management, whatever, weighing in on the Brooklyn Center story. From a protest standpoint as well, if he's heard anything in that regard. It may be too early in the process, but we'll get into that and a couple of other things with our guy, John Krasinski.